Welcome to the Grateful American Radio Show, hosted by author and publisher David Bruce Smith. What did George Washington do that you might not know about? What did Abe Lincoln know that could change the way you think about the Civil War? You'll learn about all that and more on this special show designed to restore excitement in American history. Let's get started. Hello, and welcome to the Grateful American Radio Show. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, your co-host, and today we are doing part two of an interview with Jim Basker, president of the Gilder Lehrman Institute for American History here in New York City. And we're turning the tables a little bit. Our president and founder of the Grateful American Foundation, David Bruce Smith, will be interviewed by Jim, who's got questions about what we're up to and how we can work together with this wonderful organization based here in New York. So I'm going to throw it over to Jim. Take it away.
Well, thank you, Hope, and I'm really glad to have this opportunity, and thank you for giving it to me. David, right up front, where does the Grateful American Foundation come from in your own inspiration and thinking? What do you want to do with it?
Okay, so my father always referred to himself as a grateful American. That's because we are and were a very fortunate family, and he was a great believer in giving back to the community. So I took his sentiment and made it into a noun, and that is how the Grateful American series started in principle.
So it's a wonderful thing. Your father, I wish you'd say more about some of the things your father did. I never met the man, but I read over and over again institutionally some of the great benefactions and projects that he was part of.
Well, my father, Robert H. Smith, besides being a builder developer in Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, was also a great believer in education, and he felt very fortunate to be able to live in a country where you could say and think anything you wanted. So founding fathers and Abraham Lincoln were his people of choice because they, the founding fathers, that is, made everything possible for us in his view. So there's nothing that gave him more pleasure than to go to a Mount Vernon or a Monticello or a Montpelier or a Lincoln Cottage or the Benjamin Franklin home in London and to see kids enthusiastic about learning. I mean, that really spurred him on.
That's so wonderful. So in that sense, his giving back wasn't just a kind of tribute to the founders, but it's also a sharing with his fellow Americans and the next generations.
Right, right.
That's magic.
Right. And my grandfather, who was a Russian immigrant, he came from a small town in Russia called Lipnik, came to America in 1911, went from rags to riches to rags to riches, and at the age of 67, gave it all up for my father and uncle to run the Charles E. Smith Company. So he could do what he said, something more important. You know, the community, he felt, had been very kind to him. Now he wanted to give back. He focused his resources on the Jewish community in Washington, Maryland, Virginia, New York, Israel. But it was the same concept.
Yeah. Well, two generations. You obviously represent the genetic and spiritual extension of this into a third generation. Wonderful that you've founded this Grateful American project. What are the specific things that you hope to accomplish with it?
Well, the history is not being taught well in this country, and it seems to be a multi-generational problem that's going to take a while to correct. And I think if you can't defend your rights, then you don't know your might. And the most important thing that this foundation can do is there's historical illiteracy in this country. And with the new demographic coming in, this demographic is different from the demographic of 1880 to 1920, where that wave of immigrants wanted to generally become assimilate and become part of America. A lot of the people coming in now aren't interested in that. So there will be more people who don't know George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Alexander Hamilton, Abraham Lincoln, and that's just unacceptable. I mean, if you want to be, in my opinion, if you want to be an American citizen, you have to know your history.
Yes, and we have to go back to those core things that make America attractive for people to come to. How is it that we have freedom of religion? It isn't just an accident. How is it that there's economic opportunity? Again, it's not an accident. So,
and there are certain
vein.
There are certain places in this country where you don't have to have a history credential like 25 years ago to teach history. Phys ed teacher, you teach history. Math teacher, you're going to teach history. You don't like it? Too bad. Teach history. That's not good. I mean, that doesn't generate any interest to a student. So for kids who are lucky enough to have a great teacher, then I think there's less of a problem. I have two children. My oldest, every history teacher she had was a bust. She hates history. My youngest, my son, he was rescued from that problem in eighth grade with this incredible history teacher. He loves history, and he's at the Naval Academy.
That's great.
He is such a patriot. Now, I'm not going to say it's because he had a great history teacher, but it certainly didn't hurt.
It's part of it. By the way, that eighth grade history teacher should be nominated for History Teacher of the Year, because when a parent says that about the impact on a child, it's magic. You do so much. You've got this program. You're doing a promotion of, you know, awareness, raising awareness around American history, but you also write a great deal.
Right.
Would you say a little bit about, you know, what moved you to become a writer and some of the most important books you've done and why?
I think what attracted me to writing was it was my grandfather told me very early on that biography was very important. And it was important to know about people's lives, particularly great people's lives. So when I was in third grade, I was criticized by the teacher for reading too many biographies and not enough fiction, which kind of stuck. I've never forgotten that, actually. It was kind of stung. I thought it was a little strange. But anyway.
I'm glad you held out, though.
But there is something very therapeutic about the act of writing that appealed to me. And I think that it was the initial appeal. So the books that you're talking about, the John Marshall, which is was a commission from the John Marshall Foundation in Richmond, and the Abraham Lincoln book was a commission from the National Trust. Those were very lucky breaks. I mean, they were very lucky breaks. So that's how those came about. But earlier, I had written books about. I wrote five books about my grandfather. I wrote a book about my mother. And I did a book, it wasn't a commission, but it was a joint project. It was a limited edition book about Tennessee Williams with the Shakespeare Theater in Washington. So we took three plays. We got one play that had never been published from the artistic director of the Shakespeare Theater, Michael Kahn. The play was called These Are the Stairs You Gotta Watch. And then we got the rights for Glass Menagerie and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And then my mother, so Michael Kahn wrote an introduction. I wrote a made up interview between Tennessee and myself. And my mother did these graphite and watercolor prints of those three Tennessee Williams women and three other women.
Fantastic. It's quite a variety of material. It's great to see you doing these imaginative projects like the Lincoln book in a kind of, it's authentic leather binding and variegated type over time, and a kind of fictionalized but very realistic diary that brings
everything. It's accurate. Accurate. But, I mean, there are certain things that I just...
I love it. And then to do a children's book so that the outreach about John Marshall goes there. The obvious question is, what's next? What do you think about writing as your next book?
It would be nice to do a children's book on John Adams. A children's book, I've discovered, is completely different from anything else. It's like a cooking reduction. You have to reduce everything to its simplest form, and if while you're writing it, whatever it is you're saying, if you don't understand it, then you have to throw it out and start again. Because if you don't understand it, a kid's not going to understand it either.
What a formula. I can see the logic of it. And beyond the books, are there any other projects or initiatives that you're considering now or you have in your plans?
Well, there are always book reviews. There are possible e-guidebooks for the presidential homes. There are possible e-children's books on the founding fathers.
So it sounds the digital media are the future.
It's not my preferred future. I like the tactile world.
I sense that from the leather binding you commissioned for this beautiful Lincoln book. It's a great idea. Well, I hope one of the future projects will be a partnership with the Gilder Lehrman Institute and that we'll get a chance to do some really interesting and
productive
things.
That would be great.
It's super. David, thanks very much for sharing this time with me, and I hope we'll continue the conversation regularly.
So do I. Thanks.
Great stuff.
Thanks so much, Jim, for having us here at your New York offices, the Gilder Lehrman Institute for American History. We look forward to talking to you more. You are listening to the Grateful American Radio Show. Tune back again for more episodes at www.gratefulamericanfoundation.com. Thanks so much. You have been listening to the Grateful American Radio Show, hosted by author and publisher David Bruce Smith. Here's to restoring enthusiasm in history for kids and adults, too.